it was all a pipe dream, watching bodyboarding up on TV. Deep at reef, watching tension repeats, eating bakery feeds at 18, living the dream with no sunscreen. Yeah, we were so keen, surfing Aussie pipe, buying Riptide, eating shit pipe.
All right, g'day, welcome to the Riptide Bodyboarding Podcast, the home of bodyboarding. Thank you for joining us on episode 83 of our verbal journaling, and I'm your host, Luke O'Connor. Today's guest is someone who I've had the pleasure of hanging out and meeting over the last couple of years here, spending a lot of time in Oz himself, being a man of multifaceted nationalities, really, coming from Portugal with a Greek and Canadian flair and twist in there to his background. He is one of the most stylish and unique cats coming out of Europe at the moment. He's a delicious pasta del nata. He's a good looking egg, and he's just a really nice guy that has really lit up the whole east coast of Australia, if not the entire coast of Australia, on his stay over the last 18 months. And really want to get him on the potty, really want to pick his brain and just see where his head's at and what's next for the great man. But please let me welcome on Steph Cocorellis. Steffi, how are you, bro?
Yeah, thanks, Luke. All good. Thank you for the introduction. Really lovely.
Oh, man, no dramas at all. And yeah, like I always say to all my guests, I mean it, man. All the things that I say in those intro, I you know, kind of quietly thinking to myself over the last 12 months especially, and obviously that's why we wanted you in the Shark Island Challenge. After all your feats that you've kind of thrown down in our homeland, you know, you've really turned some heads, and a lot of eyes have been on you consistently, especially this last winter, seeing what you're up to and where your bodyboarding's heading. So, you know, let's start off the combo with your time in Australia and how's it been, man? Because, you know, you're heading home in a week. We're sad to see you go, but what's the experience like being in the land down under?
Yeah, has been really good. I came last year, mid-year, like in June. And was like really not, like, to be honest, was a dream to me to be able to surf all these waves you have around here. You are really lucky. And and yeah, has been amazing, to be honest. This year was definitely a bit more consistent, and I had the opportunity to surf like a lot of different waves, which didn't happen last year. But yeah, like overall was amazing. Made a lot of new friends, surfed a lot of new different waves, and yeah, all I have to say is positive about Australia.
Oh, that's sick, man. That's so cool to hear. So, and this stint here, or these two stints, I know you mixed it up and went to Indo for a portion in between the two times that you've been here in Australia. Is this your first time down to Australia, and like, was it on the bucket list for a while?
Yeah, definitely. I was planning to come in 2020 because my sister was already living here. But then, like, when I was already like planning and kind of like buying tickets and everything, COVID just started. So I was like really, really sad that I couldn't come on that time, but yeah, ended up coming now, so I'm feeling grateful about it.
Yeah, definitely. Sometimes those things happen for a reason, those delays, or you know forks in the road or challenges you have to get over to kind of get through to your goal and how you want to achieve it and stuff. So I mean, yeah, for example, like me and Lozzie, my wife was supposed to go on a honeymoon. We got married in November 2019, and then we were supposed to go on a honeymoon in, I'm pretty sure it was March 2020, and obviously COVID-19 started in kind of like November, December around the world, and then by February, March, I think March the 6th or 7th was like the locking of the borders for a lot of places around the world, and we were planning on going to Mexico, and we missed out by like 3 or 4 days, which, you know, in hindsight, I'm still devastated because that's one stretch of coastline I really want to go to, especially all the right hand point breaks. But and Port Erskine, obviously, Sean Cooper, a co-host on the show, and we do comp talk together. He's over there right now and sending pictures back daily that are just making me really fucking jealous. But yeah, that was one of those times where, you know, there was a fork in the road. We couldn't go through our original plans, but then a lot of other, you know, good things grew from that. And yeah, it's funny what life serves you up sometimes. So you're here in Oz, man. Are you based in the eastern suburbs?
Yeah, I'm based in Bondi at the moment because my sister lives here, so I'm just staying with her. She has like a spare room, so it's really nice.
Sick, man.
Yeah.
And what's your experience of the eastern suburbs been like? Because you've gone to, you know, a pretty classic tourist destination for everyone around the world to hop into Sydney. Like Bondi is pretty iconic. What's the vibe been like in Bondi?
To be honest, I live here, but I don't spend like a lot of time here. So if I'm in Sydney, I'm working normally at home. And then like whenever there's wives, I'm kind of like traveling or on the road trying to get all these wives, all the swells. But yeah, like overall seems a nice place. Like it's a bit hectic, a lot of people around, but it's nice. Like it's not a bad vibe outside. But yeah, it's a new experience for me as well, because I never lived in a big city. Even in Portugal, I was living in the countryside, like in a little town near Lisbon. And yeah, it's weird to be like in the middle of the city, to be honest.
But wow, yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Steph. Did you want to say anything else? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, bro.
No, all good. Yeah.
Yeah, well, crazy, man. So been a bit of a sea change. You've gone from a country town to the big smoke, and I guess like Sydney is definitely, it's not the capital of Australia, but it's, I dare say, it's the busiest and most built up area in Australia. So you've thrown yourself in the deep end there. Have you found a nice little local coffee store or bakery with a couple of fresh treats? And may I dare say, a couple of pasta del natas on the front counter there, sir. Have you delved into that?
Yeah, I did. Of course I did. There's a place in, I think it's in Clovelly. Yeah, in Clovelly. It's called Tuga Pastries.
So like, oh, Tuga, man. Man, coffee. They're good, eh?
They are so good. They have, like, I have to say, the pastel de nata is legit. Like, it's really good. And obviously, like, the coffees and everything else is good as well. Really tasty.
Fuck yeah, man. It's so funny you say that. I only was there for a job the other day for work and stopped in there. And I think I was talking to Antonio on the side about something. And then that came up and his eyes lit up. He was like, oh, bro, that is a bakery. And I'm like, I know. Like, you could spend, I mean, you could drop $50 in there pretty easy, hey?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Everything, I feel like everything around here, it's a bit more expensive than normal around these eastern suburbs. But yeah, it's, when it's good, like, whatever. You pay a few more dollars and that's it.
Man, it's the eastern suburbs tax. It's the upper living style tax, you know. It's so funny in different demographics you go all around the world. Like, even for example, you can, when it comes to petrol prices, you can get fuel like 10, 15, 20, sometimes even 30 cents cheaper out in the western suburbs because of the different demographic out there. And then you're coming into recent suburbs and everyone supposedly is earning more money and it's a higher standard of living and blah 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 blah, which is all just blowing smoke up their asses. It's all like, I mean, there are you know, I guess nicer place to live near the water, or, you know, higher paying jobs, so to speak. But it shouldn't relate to the cost of living per se when it comes to inflation on, you know, goods and services. And far out, you definitely do notice it, eh? Like it's crazy. Like, I was only talking to my wife the other day about it too. Like, if I get lunch out in the eastern suburbs, it's standard $25, where like back home in Cronulla, I can get away with $15 to $20. So as you said, it's there's little, like, you know, price hikes that make the difference, hey?
Yeah, 100%. And it's funny that you mentioned the petrol, because I find it like a bit weird how like the prices differentiate so much in Australia. Because like in Portugal, normally the prices update like every week, but it's pretty similar everywhere. Obviously, there will be places where it's like a little bit more expensive, but not like us here, where you have like a 40 or 50 cents difference depending on the area where you are. It's really crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. I know. It's almost a little bit too capitalistic, I reckon. It's a little bit, you know, people are kind of taking the piss there, and yeah, just knowing that they can play on that whole cost of living crisis and all that kind of jazz, and yeah, throw it. But anyway, fuck petrol prices, fuck the man. We're here to talk about Boogan. And so your time, you know, up and down the coast, man, like you've done a lot of K's. You've linked up with a couple of the Pride boys, with you know, Liam. I know you spent some time with Louis. I know you did a trip over here with Tristan for one of the recent roadkill editions from the Pride Cinema. You know, like what were those trips like, and what was your favorite wave, man? Without, you know, dropping too many secrets, what was the one spot where you were like, I can't live without this wave, I need to come back?
Good question, and hard question as well to answer. But I would say Nuggin for sure. Like it's one of my favorite waves in the world, I have to say. Like, it's incredible how good it is for bodyboarding. But yeah, I did a few different trips. When I first arrived, I met Louis in the West Coast in Perth, and I surfed that wedge in Mandra, and it's really sick as well. Similar to Nuggin in a way, how good it is for bodyboarding. You can do some really good punts there. But yeah, like I surfed as well with Tristan, as you said, in South Australia, a few different waves there, and it's really nice as well. There's a lot of good slabs and crowded waves, which is amazing. And with Liam, I mostly surfed in the South Coast and around Sydney, like in Cronulla and like a little beaches around the eastern suburbs.
K Bay for life, brah.
Yeah, exactly. K Bay. Like I know, like a lot of people told me K Bay, it's really rare to be good. And I'm glad I got the chance to surf it 2 months ago or a few months ago. It was really nice for like a month or something, really consistent.
It's a super special wave, hey? Like I know, you know, people can take the piss out of it, so to speak, but I've been lucky enough to see it doing its thing. And when that sand gets pushed into the corner there and it's that flat bottom bank and, you know, it's coming out of deep water and just heaving onto a shallow sandbank, it's quite the boog wave, and it's quite appealing to the eye. Like it's yeah, the whole setup, you know, in that little tiny bay, the cliffs around there, yeah, when it's on, it's on. And it's got that kind of mystique about it, because you've got to have your finger on the pulse, you've got to be checking it regularly, you've got to be in tune with the swells and how the sand's moving around. It's a really cool wave. And I guess, you know, growing up with a lot of professional bodyboarders here in Sydney, coming out of the eastern suburbs, surprisingly, through like Alex Bunting and Jose Marquina, you know, just to name a few, they would always talk so highly of that wave when it was on. And it was a bit of a, you know, Giorgio Hanna, it was like a bit of a drug for them, you know, like they needed their hit when it was on. So Interesting. You got it, man. And it was there for a month. That was when Liam was just coming back from his shoulder injury, eh?
Yeah, exactly. It was around May and June, yeah. It's funny how it doesn't break for a couple of years, and then when the sand is on that bay, it's just constantly delivering like really nice waves, like pretty much every day, every tide, every wind. Like it's really consistent.
Yeah, and a left-hander, is that one of your favorites? Your favorite way to go?
Yeah. It's actually funny because I know I'm a bit more consistent on left, but I prefer to surf a right. If it's like a good wave, I prefer to surf a right.
That's crazy. So you feel like you've got more of a well-rounded skill set on the lefts, but you enjoy rights. Like, is home like filled with rights? Like, is there, you know, I swear to God, my time in Portugal, I felt like I surfed a lot more lefts than rights. Is that me just imagining or?
No. It's actually like the majority of the waves you have at home, it's left. And I started surfing way more left when I was young, and that's why I'm a bit more consistent on left. So if I'm doing a comp, I prefer that's a left, because I know I will be capable of doing way more things and landing everything. But I don't know why, like probably because I started progressing on rights a bit later. I just enjoy more surfing like a right, because I feel like a bit more free, and I don't know, it's a weird feeling, but yeah, I just enjoy more right.
Yeah, hectic. And what's been that right for you in the last 5 years that you've really wanted to try and surf a lot more and like work out your technique on and put the hours in at?
Yeah, it's like, I don't know how to express, but so imagine you do like really good backflip on the left, but at the same time the movement, it's kind of like similar to every years you have done it, and I feel like I cannot change it to the left. But on the right, if I see like a video of me doing a backflip, and then I can like understand something is wrong, and when I try it again, it's easier for me to change these little errors or these little, I don't know, little things that I want to progress. And yeah, I just try to be really technical on every move on right, and try to change all the little things that it is doing like on the wrong way, and I appreciate that.
That's so cool to hear, because you know everyone would look at your moves, your technical side of bodyboarding, and you've got a great scoop in you too, and you surf big waves, but when it comes to the tech side of things, like that's what's really blown everyone away with. And to hear that you are now, you know, looking to improve more things on the right, which is still epic, you know, like you've got to keep learning and growing, and you start dying once you stop learning to grow. But to hear that it's easier to do it on a way of riding, like a side, so to speak, going right, that you haven't honed in on from such a young age is really interesting to hear. So it almost seems like the muscle memory is imprinted on the left, and it's just, you know, from the second you hit the water, it's go, go, go with the lefts. But with the rights, you're still training your muscles, so to speak, to be able to mimic the moves that you want to produce. Is that correct?
Yeah, exactly. It's like exactly what you described.
Hectic, man. That's so cool. That's so cool to hear. And I guess it's kind of like a lesson and a indication for everyone out there. When you think about bodyboarding or surfing or soccer or tennis or, you know, racquetball, paddleball, whatever you're playing, you've got to think to yourself that there's always improvement there, and how can you improve? And yeah, it's interesting when you break that down, because I'm sure a lot of people be surprised to hear that. You seem so well-rounded, man. It wouldn't be something that I would expect to hear from you.
Yeah, it's I don't know, like when you I feel like when I do something, I always wanna try to improve, and try to find things where I can improve. That's like I feel like every time I'm doing like a task or a sport or whatever, I wanna be better the next time. And yeah, I feel that a lot surfing rides, which is nice. Makes me feel happy and content, like with doing it.
Phil, are you just wondering after you say that, are you a competitive person by nature?
Would say yes, but like in relation to bodyboarding, I hate doing competitions in shit waves, to be honest. I don't have like this, you know.
You
But yeah,
spoiled brother.
in general, I feel like I'm a bit competitive.
So with other things in life, like when you were growing up as a kid, like were you someone on the handball court that really wanted to stay in like the king's position, or like, were you someone playing, you've been playing, is it racquetball you were saying before?
Yeah, I've been playing paddle tennis. It's
Paddle tennis, sorry. It's like, are you really competitive in that?
like I honestly started really recently. Like I started this year, and I have been progressing a lot. So I try to do competitions and like obviously not professional competitions, but like little comps that are around me. And yeah. I'm
How
really
do you
excited.
feel? Sorry, I was going to say, how do you feel under the pressure of competition? Do you thrive under it, or do you crumble under it?
If I'm feeling not confident, or if I feel like I don't know how to do it really well, or if like I can feel like a bit scared sometimes, or like fear of losing or whatever, but whenever I'm a bit more consistent doing something, I feel like I thrive on it. I thrive on it, yeah.
Yeah, sweet. So you enjoy that kind of like when you're in the right mind frame, you enjoy the pressure a little bit. You kind of take it and use it to your advantage and excel through it.
Yeah, for sure.
That's
I feel like I'm if I have pressure, I'm a bit more focused on what I want to achieve. And it makes me better, I would say.
Yeah, sweet. You got a bit of grit, a bit of gravel in there, brother. Love it. Live it, love it. Dude, thinking about going back to your trips around Oz and everything, like you've spent a lot of time behind the wheel. Like you've done some serious driving. When you're doing commutes out to SA and back, like it's minimum 25 hours from the eastern suburbs, east coast, really, to get there from a lot of places, i.e. Sydney. And I was just wondering, during that time on the road, some funny shit goes down, man. Like sometimes the journey is better than the destination. Well, I know the saying is it's always, you got to enjoy the journey, not just the destination. So on that note, how's it been traveling around Oz in a car, and have you had any funny, sad, bad, crazy moments whilst driving? Like, is there anything that really sticks out to you that you're like, that was a moment in time?
I had like a lot of different things that happened on the road for sure. Like it's crazy the amount of animals you have around here. And I remember like when I first came, every time I was driving like on the first light, like to arrive away at the first light or whatever, I was really scared with the kangaroos and damaging my car. And that took like a part for 3 months or 4 months, I reckon. I was always like, when am I gonna hit the kangaroo? Is it now? Is it in 5 minutes? But yeah, I actually ended up eating one in South Australia. I was doing a trip there with my ex-girlfriend last year, and we were driving to a spot at night. We wanted to arrive there first light. And I was driving like really slowly, I would say like 40 k's per hour and on like a tiny road, and the kangaroo just came up out of nowhere, and we hit him, and yeah, he was still alive, but the car was really damaged. And yeah, it was a shit event. Yeah.
What did you do? Was it insured? Was it a hire car? Like, what was the process there?
Yeah, like that's the bad part of it. Was like a hire car, and was insured. But I rented the car in Perth, and I was supposed not to use it, like to pass to another state in Australia. I didn't know anything about Australia, so I thought like it's just one country, so I'm obviously I can drive all around. I didn't know you have borders and everything. So basically I hit the kangaroo in South Australia, and because I crossed the border, like that those borders you have like between states, the agency of the rental car knew I was in South Australia, so they started calling me saying I had to go back to WA as soon as possible, and that was exactly when I hit the kangaroo. So I was really stressed if I should like tell them if I hit the kangaroo, or if I should like just leave it and then tell them when I arrive back to Perth. And yeah, it was really stressful, but ended up okay, because I had like an insurance and everything was solved.
But how did you deliver the news to him, bro? Because like I'm thinking in my head, if there's any sort of negligent behavior when it comes to honoring that insurance policy, and if you're in another state and you're not covered, surely the insurance is void. Like did you tell him on the spot, or did you limp back into WA and kind of call it in then? Like how'd you play this, Steph?
Yeah, it was basically they started calling me, and there was like a really good swell in South Australia, so I didn't answer the calls for like a few days. I just wanted to surf those waves, and then I don't know, in the end of the swell I would come back easily. And and basically it started progressing, because they started sending messages saying if I didn't reply or if I didn't call back, they would report it to the police as a stolen car. And yeah. And basically the swell was just 3 or 4 days. So in the end of those 3 days, I came back to WA, I crossed the border, and I called them saying I was already in WA. And that's when I gave the notice, the news about the kangaroo. And they were like really, really pissed off. But
what was the vibe on the phone? Like what was the person's reaction, or you know, the not telemarketer, I guess, like the phone assistant, or you know, the officer in charge of the booking, like what was the reaction on the phone?
Actually he was the owner of the agency, because it was like a small agency, probably the cheapest I found. And he was really, really pissed off, saying like the car was not insured because I was in South Australia, blah, blah, blah. But he actually, I explained everything really well. Like it was not my fault. And I told him I didn't know about that rule from crossing borders. So basically when I arrived back to Perth, we had a few like conversations in person. I explained everything a bit better, and then he just made me pay a fee for crossing the state, which is a fee that they have, but I didn't know I was supposed to pay more to cross the border. So yeah, in the end I just paid that fee, they solved everything, and the car was insured, so I just had to pay some money up front, and then they refunded me after a week or after 2 weeks.
Wow, man, that worked out pretty well, and you played a pretty cool hand too, because yeah, if you got back to him and kind of crumbled on the phone and let him know of what had happened in South Oz, I reckon that would have, you know, ended so much differently. Like it was, yeah, well played, mate. Very, very calm, yeah, under pressure. Like you're just talking about the, competitions, you know, you thrive under those pressure cooker situations and bam, you find yourself one with a car and a fucking kangaroo in WA, so well in.
Yeah. There was something really weird that happened on that trip back home, like back to Perth. On the last day, I think we drove 2 days, like 10 hours or a bit more maybe. And on the last day, we were just 2 or 3 hours from Perth and we were stopped by the police. And we were not sure what was happening. I actually told my girlfriend, like, I'm pretty sure I was not speeding. And then they basically saw everything on our car. They asked like a lot of weird questions, and after like 20 minutes they left us. Like they said, like, you can go, but we never understood what was that. Like I'm not sure if it was related to the car agency, like because of crossing the border or something. Probably the police had like a notice there was like a higher car on the other side of the border or something. I'm not sure what happened there, but was really weird.
So did you have like a highway patroller pull you over? Like, was it a done yeah. up kind of like, yeah, you know, BMW or Ford or Holden at the time that, you know, had all the stickers and everything on it? And then, you know, what kind of questions were they asking if it was a highway patroller?
It was not like a police car. It was like a white, I don't know, BMW or whatever.
Oh, well, it was undercover.
Undercover, yeah. And they, they didn't ask, like, they didn't say I did something wrong. They were just asking random questions, like where, what was our names, like where we're coming from, what's our plans in Australia and everything. And they had like all those cameras on their bodies and like they were trying to separate us just to see if we tell the same story. And yeah, it was really weird. But then after like 10 or 15 minutes, they said just like, okay, you're good to go. And yeah, never wow. happened.
Maybe because yeah. they thought it was a hire car and they've kind of got, you know, it could definitely be the story you're thinking of, like it had been reported to the police about you hopping over the border. But oh, I think after that you came in contact with the agency and said you were heading back, I reckon that even if they did call the police, that would have been kind of dropped or forgotten about. But I reckon sometimes coppers, especially when they're bored, and just know that because your number plate would have flashed up as a hire car, because they scan every number plate that goes by. Sometimes I swear to God, for the human nature and just like, you know, anthropology and kind of understanding how, you know, the human brain works, we're all human. And when you're put in a position of power, sometimes that position of power can be not abused, but definitely used to their advantage. I reckon sometimes it's like, hey, these people look like out of towners, let's just pull them over for the sake of it and see if we can get anything. So did they breath test you or drug test you or anything?
No, nothing. They just reviewed all the car, like probably trying to find drugs or.
Oh, so they went through the whole car though. They searched the car.
Yeah, they asked these questions and then they searched the car, like, and yeah.
Bros, they can't leave. I know it's all done. It's all, you know, you were complying, and I would have been the same, I guess, to a certain extent, except that like. They're supposed to have a reason to search your car. Like, well, once they ask you these questions, you know, if you fail one of those questions or you, you know, clearly under the influence or they drug test you or they breath test you or something and something comes up, then yeah, they have the right to search your car. But yeah, it's just strange to see that they would just search you and your ex-girlfriend for no reason, bro. It's, yeah, shit happens in the Wild West though, doesn't it? It's the Wild West out there, bro.
Exactly.
Wow. And so what, like, you know, we've gone through the stuff you've had on the road, but what was the scariest and spookiest moment you've you've had traveling around Australia, like, you know, you would have been sleeping in some pretty crazy car parks, or, you know, possibly like, you know, random parts of town, or just out in the middle of nowhere where no one's around, and that can also be a little bit eerie at times. Like, you know, I'm Australia's a relatively safe place, but I'm just saying, like, have you ever experienced the time out on a trip where something spooky or weird or almost supernatural has happened?
Not really. Like, I didn't feel anything weird. I had like a situation where I was a bit scared, but I guess it's normal for Australians, which was like when I was driving to South Australia on one of the trips I did. I was just like on the road and I started seeing flames like in the front of me, like a few k's in the front. And then like out of nowhere, I was driving in the middle of like a huge fire, and it was really intense because I couldn't see anything. The smell was really intense. And after like 2 minutes or 3 minutes, I just drove out of it. And then I remember I stopped like in a petrol station just to see what was happening, if it was like a really, really bad thing happening on the road. And people were just like normal, saying like, oh yeah, it's just a fire. We are in the middle of nowhere, so there's no risk or anything that we can do. It's just like a fire. And I was like, what the fuck? Like in Portugal, if this was happening, it would be on the news and everyone would know what was happening. But yeah, it was definitely one of the craziest experiences I had driving as well, like in the middle of nowhere.
Where the fuck was this, man? Like, I mean, I understand backburning events, but then you would have like the retained fire is there. They would be, you know, diverting the route or something like that. But like where did this happen, and was it from natural causes, the fire, or did someone light it? Like, what was the go?
I don't know information about it because I remember being really, like, really stressed about it. Like, I was, what the fuck is happening? This should not be happening. This is not normal. But with everyone that I talked with, they were just, like, really chilled. They were like, oh, yeah, it's just another fire. And yeah, this was somewhere between Esperance and the start of Nollarbor. I'm not sure where.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah, you're pretty deep in it there. That's pretty barren country.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Is that pretty close to the border then?
No, it was still like WA. Probably
still WA, okay. So on that side of it. Yeah, sweet. Yeah, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, probably before like the desert started, like we're in the north of Esperance somewhere.
So was it just shrubs that were burning, like trees? Like what was happening? Was there any, like, you know, wildlife cruising around? Like, I don't know. Like, I mean, if there was a fire on the east coast like that and you were allowed to drive through it, or like people were driving through it, surely there'd be something going out. That sounds pretty bizarre.
Yeah, it's just like, it was trees. It was at night as well, so I couldn't see much. But I remember the feeling of thinking like when this will finish, like there's an end, or it will be like this forever and then we will die somewhere.
We'll come into a smoldering black mess. Yeah. And the car will melt, and yeah, that'll be two Portuguese tourists die in Australia of just a random fire that no one reported. Just sounds normal. Sounds normal.
Yeah.
Crazy, bro. Crazy. So just that recapping, like, when did you get here in Oz, Steph? And you're leaving next week. So what's that time frame? Like, what's the time span there?
Yeah, so I arrived April last year. I spent 1 month between Western Australia and South Australia. And then I did like a little trip to Indonesia, and I flew back to the East Coast like in June. And
sweet.
And yeah, and from June 2023 until now, I have been between here and Indonesia. Did a few more trips to Indonesia while I was in this side of the world.
Bro, you must be laughing your way to the bank with memories and good times. Like, so you've spent like what, 15 months really all up when you break it down. We're in August now, almost in August. This will be posted in August and you're leaving next week. So yeah, 15 months of just good times, booging. And I know you're still like working abroad and you're doing some stuff on your laptop here and there, but like generally, man, this must have been one of the greatest times of your life.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I feel like I will actually understand it better or feel it a bit more real when I go back to Portugal and kind of like see what happened on the last year or the last years, let's say.
Did you plan on spending this much time in Australia?
Not really. I just, when I left Portugal, I knew I'll be traveling for 6 months at least, but I was not sure what would happen after. And ended up staying like probably like 15 or 18 months abroad, which was really sick.
Smosy. And what did your parents and your family think back home? Did they kind of knew that they saw the twinkle in your eye that you were going to be away for a bit longer and, you know, you might not be back to the motherland soon?
Yeah, I think so. Because I left like planning a trip in Asia. So I did travel last year. I did travel in India, Sri Lanka, and Nepal. And then I obviously knew I was coming to Indonesia and Australia. But I think, yeah, everyone, like all my friends and family knew I was like about to leave for like a fair bit of time. Which was always like my dream to travel the world and surf in Australia and surf in Indonesia. So yeah.
How was Indo, man? Like it looked like you scored Java pretty red hot. And yeah, by all reports, like that, those two waves over there, I always forget their names, the left and the right there, just look mind-bending. They almost look like out of a PlayStation game. It's so ridiculous how, you know, in different winds, they're trade winds or like variable winds or whatever, one side's good, the other side's bad, and it swaps back and forwards like with the different tides and wind changes. Like what was your experience over there in Java?
It was really nice. I have been there more than four times now. And it's, to be honest, it has to be one of the best places on the world. Like you are like in a little town with lovely people. You have like one beach and it has like one island on the left side, another island on the right side, and you have a left breaking on that island and a right on the other island and then a channel in the middle. And the left works better on low tide. The right works better on high tide. The right works better with like the morning winds, let's say, and the left better with the afternoon wind. So it's really nice, like a really consistent place, really good vibe. And obviously like a lot of good memories come from it.
Sick, man. And so what was your favorite side, left or right?
Left. I think the left is slightly better than the right. It's a bit longer.
Yeah, it seems like it. Yeah, from all the footage, it really does seem like that. Hey, like the right looks amazing and punchy and there's a nice barrel to bowl section, but the left seems to just have so many different faces to it. It just seems so unique. Not one wave is the same out there. I know not one wave in the ocean is ever the same, but out there it just seems very... Yeah, just a lot of spice of life in the wave. Like there's so much going on. It throws out so many scenarios.
Yeah, true. It has a lot of different shapes. There's like a big ramp with certain conditions. And then with other conditions, there's like a huge barrel, really heavy, really perfect. And Yeah, I feel like the left is better. At least when I was there, the left was way better, and I tried to spend like all the time on the left. But I heard the right gets good. It's just like a bit more fickle. Obviously, it's good every time you go there, but it gets better than that. I think there's a few people saying the right gets really long as well with a certain swell direction.
Oh, wow. Okay. So it kind of like lengthens out a bit and just keeps wrapping in on itself.
Yeah, exactly. It breaks like closer to the island, and it's just like a long barrel, really heavy, and then like a good ramp in the end, like a good bowl.
Sounds like a perfect boog wave.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like a bit, I feel like I've seen waves like that on the right, but not consistent, not like a full afternoon. Like a full session, every set come like that. Where in the left, usually if it's good, it's just good for 3 hours, and every set would be good, you know?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It's just inconsistent. You kind of got to get that gem out of the session. It's not going to hand you up multiple gems in one go. What was the culture like over there? Because it's generally or like heavily populated by Muslims.
Yeah. It's like they have really different culture from us, but they are really nice and really open to tourists. So like whenever you meet a person from Java or from that specific place, they will be super friendly. They will try to speak English with you even if they don't speak English. And they are like super curious, like what like thinking, what are you doing here? And then they understand you are a surfer, and then just they just laugh at you, which is really nice. And where I'm thinking, like comparing to other places in Indo, I feel like Sumatra, for example, which is like a really popular place as well, everyone goes there. It's different. It's just like there are Muslims as well, but they are less friendly, in my opinion. I feel like they don't like us tourists, where in Java they just love us and stare at us and laugh and try to be with us and try to ask questions and everything. So yeah, it's different. I prefer the vibe in Java, to be honest.
I've heard that too. I've heard Sumatra can be a little bit harder to get along and get around on the island just because it's probably not as easy going with the sort of people. But what's the exchange rate like over there? Like, did you find that the cost of living was pretty cheap and you stretch your trips out a bit longer than normal?
Yeah, for sure. It's really cheap, especially in Java, because it's not touristic, at least now. So let's say with $20, I think, yeah, $20, you can have a bed and 3 meals per day,
Wow.
which is insane. Yeah, and it's not like a shit place. It's like an actual like comfortable place with good food, with a pool on the backyard, 50 meters from the ocean. So like it's really nice.
Hectic. You were there when the Riptide Boys went over for Magnitude 6, hey?
Yeah, last year in June, I think.
How was your first impressions of Elliot and all the boys, Jack and Cam and Lachlan and all that? Like, what was the vibe like on the island with those fellas on there?
It's really, really funny. Like, was a big contrast with the Portuguese crew. Like, we were probably like seven or eight Portuguese, and then you had the Riptide Boys, and like so different. Like, the Australian guys would be drinking beers all day and surfing and doing crazy stuff in the ocean, getting injured. Like, every time some Australian would come out of the water, you would see blood somewhere. Where the Portuguese guys would be all clean, and not drinking a lot of beers, just probably like one or two, three maximum. Yeah, it's crazy like how different it is. but yeah, the crew is just really nice.
Yeah, sick. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I was just going to say that, yeah, the drinking culture is pretty heavily ingrained here in Australia. I'm actually drinking a beer with this podcast right now, so it's quite fitting you mentioned that. But also, too, you encountered a wild bunch of blokes there on that trip, man. Like, you know, Elliot Williams and Elliot Butler, the two co-owners of this publication that I do the podcast for there. They're lovely blokes, love them to death. You know, you have a real good yarn with them and they're funny as hell, but fuck me, they're wild. They love sending it and having a good time and, yeah, don't hold back. So you got the full show there, I reckon, on that trip.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I remember one afternoon, like, I think I was surfing with the Portuguese guys, like, and we were surfing the left and we did some nice waves, but nothing crazy. It was like really big and heavy. And I remember thinking when I was surfing, like, where are the Australian guys? Why are not there paddling out? And then when I came in, I remember seeing everyone like on the front hotel there, just drinking beers and laughing and everything. And then I think, yeah, Elliot Butler just like drinking beers, and then he just jumps into the water last hour, and he did basically the best two waves of the day, just like in 30 minutes, and then he comes in again and that's it. And I was like, fuck man, maybe I should drink beers all afternoon and then surf for 30 minutes instead of surfing for 3 hours.
Yeah, well, there's, as I've said before, I guess there's a million ways to skin a cat, and some people do it differently and have different techniques, but I probably wouldn't advise you having a skin full of piss and hopping into the ocean. I know those fellas can pull it off, but I remember Elliot Butler on this potty actually rehashing and reliving a moment where he almost drowned on the right, not because he was probably so maggot, just because he was, you know, tired, and he said he'd been sucking on these vapes and he was a bit out of cardio fitness and whatever. And yeah, you know, like the ocean giveth, the ocean taketh, it could have definitely gone the wrong way. So I reckon surfing the 3 hours and getting your fitness up and making sure your head's in the game is probably a good way. And it's served you well, Steph. I think you're doing pretty well for yourself, brother. Don't change anything. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Wild, man. And so you did Java, you came back to Oz, and then, you know, I kept seeing stuff of you down at Aussie Pipe. Like, I kept seeing so many clips. I know Liam's obsessed with that wave, so I'm sure he was always taking you there. And then you hooked up with, was it Alex Pickering and Sophie Jane and Jay McCann and stuff, and you guys were having a fair few, you know, good sessions down there also at the Aussie Pipe.
yeah, like last year was really inconsistent in everywhere, I guess, but not at Aussie Pipe. So I remember every time off I had, or every weekend or whatever, I was going there and obviously had some really good sessions. And yeah, the wave is insane. It has to be one of the best waves in the world for bodyboarding, I think. But yeah, a lot of good memories from that wave. Hopefully I can surf it before I leave.
I reckon you will. I reckon there's a day in the forecast that you'll get coming up. What day are you leaving next week?
Friday. Yeah, Friday next week.
Yeah, for sure. There's a couple of little sneaky days in the middle of the week there that looks to be a little pulse coming up from all those lows we're getting. No, not to mention the huge East Coast low or the Tasman low that's spinning off our coast in between the East Coast and New Zealand at the moment. We know we've got mega swell as we record this, but there looks to be a couple little backups. So I reckon you'll get back down there to the sacred land, brother, Summer Cloud. But what was your experiences down there like? You were ripping the place apart, but did you ever have any run-ins with any locals? Did you ever have to pay the tax with your car? Like, it doesn't happen that often down there anymore. It's definitely become a lot more user-friendly, but man, back in the day, 10, 15, 20 years ago, it was a pretty notorious place for you know, breaking into cars and getting told to fuck off and a couple little fisticuffs here and there.
Yeah, I heard a lot of stories, but I guess I was lucky. I never had any crazy situations there.
Must just be that charming mix of Portuguese, Greek, and Canadian ethnicity, eh?
Yeah, probably.
Dude, what a mix your background has. Like, fuck, dude. I knew you weren't just straight Portuguese because I was like, man, there's something else in there. It's like Joanna Schenker, one of your country women. Like, she's obviously got a German background in there too with her Portuguese. And it's amazing, like, the mix, because you've got the hardened, you know, resourceful, kind nature of a Portuguese fella, but then you've got that twist in there, that Greek twist. Like, I'm married to a half Greek woman. Her mum's full Greek, so like, it's crazy. It's all second generation. Well, she's first generation. The mum was his second generation. So, you know, yeah. I definitely appreciate that side of things, and then throw in Canada in there too, man. Like, what's your bloodline? Like, hey, how's your family made up? But where do all these backgrounds come from?
Yeah, so like, I grew up in Portugal, and my mother is Portuguese, and my father is Greek, and that's why I have like the Greek name. But I never lived in Greece. I just visited a lot of times. And then Canada, I don't have blood, like Canadian blood. It's just like my parents were doing the university in Canada. So they lived there for a couple of years and they had residency. So basically I have a passport just for convenience. But it's a shame, but I've never been there. I have to go one day.
Oh man, you have to. Do you like skiing or snowboarding?
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, bro, you'd lose your mind. Like, me and Loz did 3.5 months in a motorhome over there from December to the middle of March, and like freezing, you know, kind of couple of minus 35 days.
Right?
Yeah, it was crazy, man. Yeah, we had like, yeah, it's winter. Yeah, we had a propane heater in the RV that we hired for that time, and we just took our skis and have enough food and delicious homegrown Canadian bud to keep us going through those cold nights. And we would just ski every day, smoke most afternoons, and just enjoy the Canadian culture that was, you know, like traveling through the countryside there and just seeing all the different towns surrounded by ridiculously tall mountains and some of the best the terrain that you'll ever lay your eyes on, man. It snows quite heavily. We had a really good season where a lot of moisture was getting fed in from the Pacific. We had a lot of cold air coming down from Alaska, and it was just hitting exactly where we were. And we got to ski like 10 ski resorts, did like 3 backcountry missions. Well, actually, I did one like 5-day tour and then 3 backcountry missions with Loz after that. And yeah, just... That's so many good time. Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's just fucking crazy, Steph. I could not recommend enough to go there. I think it has to be next on your bucket list. I know there's not much Bougain there. I know the Dragon's Iron boys went over and surfed the Yeti, you know, and made stuff happen. That's, I'm pretty sure, just inside the Canadian border there. But, like, just to go and board and ski, man, fuck, it's such a cool place.
Yeah, I'll definitely go there because I have my brother living there at the moment. So, I have to plan a trip there probably next year. Let's see. I want to do a lot of things, so it's always hard to plan. But hopefully I can travel to the places I want in the next years. And Canada.
What do you want to do? Like, you know, you've got obviously Canada in the back pocket, but like, where else do you want to go? Are there any pride trips coming up or any places in the world you really want to go, Boog?
Yeah, like there's a few places that are really hard to to access from Portugal, let's say, because you have to pay a lot of money on flights and a lot of time to get there. And these places are Tahiti, Samoa, Cook Islands, Fijis, Philippines. And yeah, I would love to go back to Hawaii as well. I was there when I was 14, and I remember I had a really good time there. And I actually promised myself I would go back there one day. but yeah, that's pretty much it. I want to go back to Japan as well. It's not related to bodyboarding, more because of the snow. I know there are some good waves there as well, but I guess it's like a bit hard to score.
Japan is such an amazing place. So, like, would you want to go to the South Island of Honshu or the North Island of Hokkaido?
I did Hokkaido this year, the start of the year.
You actually went this year. Sick. Did you go boarding over there?
Yeah, in Niseko, right? Yeah.
Ah, sick. Yeah, I've done Niseko. Epic little joint. That's pretty much pound for pound the snowiest place in the world.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like in Europe, we don't have that snow, I reckon. Like it's really good, like really powder.
You've just got way taller mountains though, I guess. Like you guys really have mountains in between like 3 to 5 kilometers above sea level, where the top in the Seiko, for example, I'm pretty sure tops out at 1.3 Ks, 1.4. So that's just the base, say, for everyone here in Australia. Threadbow's village sits at 1.3 Ks, and then the top of Mount Kosciuszko is 2,228 meters. So, you know, and then the highest lifted point, I think, in Australia is just under 2,200 meters in Threadbow, but Carol's there. So when you think about the fall line there and whatever you have here in Australia, like we don't have the height or the snow, but we still get away with a couple of, you know, fun months in winter where you can go for a slide. But mm-hmm. with in Japan, like because of their geographical location and all the cold air streaming down from, what's the coldest place on Earth? Not Russia, Siberia. Siberia. And then it hits that really thin sea of Japan. And then you've got obviously Japan being super volcanic and on a fault line, all those mountains, especially in Honshu, where you've got like, you know, Hakuba and Nozu Onsen and Moiwa and all that kind of stuff, they are, you know, hitting from cold air, moisture on the thin sea of Japan, and then hits a very steep rising mountain range that then drops so much snow, and you get all those you know, special features of a pretty perfect, you know, kind of weather climate for snow coming together. Where, and same on Hokkaido, it's a bit more volcanic, the mountains are more kind of rounded, but you know, the amount of snow that they get because of their geographic location is ridiculous, man. Like it's so strange to have mountain range, like, you know, for example, Whistler in Canada, because they're only about an hour or two from the coast, they get a lot of snow. They get a lot of wet snow sometimes, and they can get rain because they can get warmer, moist air coming off the ocean. It hasn't been cooled yet. But because Japan is located next to Siberia, and when you get a northwest front, frontal system going, pretty much the same storms that hit Japan with the cold air that come down from Siberia rip across the Pacific as they track in, like, you know, from a west to east perspective and hit Hawaii. So then in their, you know, Hawaii season from November through to March, it's exact same for Japan with snow because they're using the same systems. Like you can have snow in Japan 3 days prior, and then the North Shore just lights up for 5 days with a mega XL swell because of the ferocity of those storms and how it's all kind of working up there in like the Northern Hemisphere. So yeah, Japan is such a special place, and I've done that 3 times, like a month each time, skiing over there, and I could keep doing it time and time again. There's just so many other places to visit in the world, but man, Japan is just the mecca, eh? Like it is incredible. Like they get an average, I think, of 16 to 18 meters snowfall a year, like on an annual winter base at Niseko every year, man. That is astronomical, man. Don't you reckon?
Yeah, it's crazy. I remember when I was there, it was snowing every day, and the forecast was to snow every day, like pretty much forever. And
yeah,
in Europe, that doesn't happen. Like you can have like 1 week of snow in 1 month, and you are lucky. And yeah, in Japan, I remember it was always snowing, like every day, all day, pretty much.
And that's those Norwest storm cycles just kicking in, like when Hawaii's getting swell, Japan's pretty much getting snow because it's come from Japan. And yeah, it's once it kind of happens, it's almost harder to kick out of it than to stay in it. It's such a natural wonder of the world, man. Like Japan is such a cool place. It's becoming very popular with Australians too, actually. Elliot Williams, co-owner of this publication, recently bought some property over there with Elliot Butler, the other owner, to an old kind of ski chalet lodge that they picked up. And yeah, they're going to be doing it up, renovating it, and making sure that it's all ready to go. And they're going to be spending some time over it there, and I'm sure Airbnb-ing it out and renting it out to people they see fit. And yeah, it's becoming a real popular thing.
They should do a riptide team trip there with some snow and bodyboarding as well.
That'd be sick, bro. That'd be sick to send a boog down a mountain. Eh? Like I did that in Kicking Horse, just a resort outside of Golden in British Columbia in Canada, and I got kicked off the mountain before I could even stop sliding down on the flat bit just at the bottom of the lifts. Yeah, I came down. I've still got the video on my phone if anyone wants to see it. But I remember going to Loz, like I didn't have a bodyboard. I just had one of those they use them as toboggans over there, but like the real thin pieces, sheets of plastic that are like, you know, as big as a boog, but you've got handles on them and you can kind of maneuver them down like the slope. It's supposed to be like in a designated kids area or whatever, but I just took it up to like one third of the way up, like the main front run, and just loaded up, jumped on, threw the Craigs on, and was trying to do spins and at one stage just bulleted down the mountain, and I had mountain operations on my ass so quickly, man. I had it ripped out of my hands before I was sliding, and I was escorted off in front of all these like puzzled Canadians looking at me going, what the fuck is this Aussie dude doing crossing his legs, sliding down the front run here on his stomach, you know, while his missus films him. It was yeah, it was a bizarre one, but I was stoked I got it in because it's a bit of a bucket list thing, you know. You see all the tension clips of all the old boys going down the mountains at Threadwell and Perisher off, like, you know, a bit of the side country, and they've got boogs, and I'm pretty sure, like, Ben Williams and Alex Leon and a lot of the Cronulla fellas were involved in that too, and just, yeah, mayhem. Like, you can pick up some speed on a bodyboard going down one of those slopes, man. There's no real way to stop.
Yeah, I could imagine. I never tried it, but yeah, you just keep going until there's like a flat bit.
Dude, this is the next big project for Pride. You got to get Seb on the line, bro. Pitch it to him and be like, we need to go to the mountains. We've done all the shit in the ocean. There's a couple more waves to explore, don't get me wrong. There's a couple more ridiculously big moves to execute, but let's get to the mountains and let's make a clip, because that's something people haven't done. And yeah, if you incorporate it with some sort of surfing adventure too, like it'd be pretty wild. Like, surely there's mountains, aren't the Pyrenees mountains in on the border of Spain and France, they're pretty accessible to the ocean. Like, you could ski, you know, in the morning and maybe boog like Le Grave or, you know, Leban, or one of the waves in France on the French beaches in the afternoon.
Yeah, for sure. Like, it will be probably 4 hours drive, 3-4 hours drive. So you can definitely do it. Even in Portugal, we have a little mountain which is like 1 hour and a half from the coast.
I know this mountain. I actually looked it up when I was there staying with Miguel Coelho, because you know, we had the skis and we were kind of thinking about doing it. We just hadn't received enough snowfall that year. I know it's a little bit hit and miss, but when it dumps, it can be good, hey?
Yeah. It's just like a little mountain. I'm not sure, like probably 1,600 or 700. So it needs to be like pretty big storm to snow. And when it does, it's fun, but it's not like a big mountain. You don't have many slopes and everything. But yeah, it's fun, especially for the park. If you want to do tricks or rails or whatever, that's actually really good.
Fuck yeah. And what's the wine capital in Portugal? Is it the Douro Valley or Douro Valley?
Douro Valley, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty legit up there. Eh? That's some nice country.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's just like a long valley with a little like river in the middle, and pretty much on every part of land, it's wineries and just like, it's really nice. It's beautiful. Have you been there?
I have, yeah. We're not all the way up. We kind of did a little bit of the first bit of the road and turned around just because we were just kind of, you know, on a time frame and cruising further south. But yeah, like really nice and beautiful, man. Like a lot of places there in Portugal. A lot of places in Portugal actually reminded me of Australia. In heaps of ways, like especially the national parks and some of the rivers and waterfalls you guys have are very similar to some of the ones that we have here, especially on the East Coast. So it was really, it was just nice, yeah. And warming and homely.
Yeah. I can definitely relate Portugal with Australia. Like there's a lot of places like, for example, Cronulla, when you are on the cliff, like in Shark Island and in that area, I feel like in Portugal we have a similar coastline and there's a lot of similarities.
Is that down at Cascais?
Yeah, Cascais. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I knew you were speaking about that zone. That's where Minnie's ex-girlfriend was from, Carlotta. Yeah. And yeah. We would always cruise down there, and that's a pretty nice part of Portugal, eh?
Yeah, it's really, at the moment, it's really premium. There's like a lot of tourists buying property there and
fuckers.
But yeah, that's where I studied all my primary school and high school, and pretty much all my friends are from that area.
Sick, man.
Yeah, and we have some waves as well in that coast. It's like a bit protected from the swells because it's like south coast, kind of like it's a bit directed to the south. But there's a few little breaks on that coast, and there's like a really good beach break, Carcavelos.
Yes, I've heard about this wave.
Yeah, there's a few wedges as well. It's a really nice place to learn how to boog or how to surf. So. Yeah, there's a big culture of surfing and bodyboarding in that zone.
Yeah, that's sick, man. Is that one of your favorite places to boog when the swell's on? Like what would be your three go-to waves in Portugal? Like, you know, the ones that you like you spoke about Nugget and Aussie Pipe and certain waves here. Like what's the three go-to in Portugal when the winter swells are on?
I would say, like I'm always chasing the west coasts, let's say. So like Ericeira, there's a lot of good reef breaks. There's one, we call it Shakira. It's really good.
Antonio speaks about it so much.
Yeah, it's probably his favorite wave. So yeah, like we chase that wave a lot. And then obviously the Bunker or Peralta, whatever you want to call it. it's a really, really nice slab as well, and usually breaks every year a few times. And then Super Tubos as well. If there's a swell for Super Tubos, I usually go there.
How do you cop the smell of fish though, man? Fuck, I love Peniche, but goddamn, the smell of fish is gnarly there.
Yeah, it's so bad, especially when it's good at Super Tubos offshore winds, you'll have like all the smell from the factories and all the warehouses in the beach. It's so bad.
It's that no races offshore there, hey?
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking in my head. Yeah, I remember sleeping in some of the car parks up on the break wall in our van after having a really nice seafood dinner there. With Antonio Miguel was there, but do you remember a guy named Jan? He's a Frenchman who lives in Ireland now.
Yeah. I know him. I met him in Ireland.
He's a good fella, man. And yeah, I remember he was so into the bass. He was just like, give me some fucking bass, man. And and like the, you know, because there's such good seafood restaurants there in Peniche. We went out for a beautiful dinner. I think I had some octopus and Lozzie had some salmon or prawns. But yeah, Jan got his bass and he was stoked. He was, I know it's a bit of a side story, a bit of a random one, but just when I thought of Peniche, I always remember Jan and his bass. And just because that wave he got recently over in Ireland, the left hand, I always forget its name. Mulligmore, that fucking crazy wave he got recently, bro. Like, how is he in the belly of the beast there? Almost skips out on the bottom turn and then just puffs the friend's chest out and flies the fucking flag high. Eh? It's so sick.
Yeah, that guy, Jan, had a lot of good waves pretty much in every place in Ireland. I remember seeing some crazy stuff from that right under the cliff or whatever it's called. Exactly. Aliens.
Yeah.
He's always, I remember when I was there like two or three times and he was always chasing and pretty much in every session he's a frother. Really nice dude.
Super nice dude, eh? Like super humble. Doesn't talk shit, just lets his actions do the talking. And yeah, super interesting fella. His wife Fiona, she's a doctor now. She's Irish and we got along like a house on fire. She's a really cool girl. So yeah, shout out to Jan and Fiona and the crew over there getting it done in Ireland. They've had some swells, eh? They've had I know it's probably not so much in season for them now, but like just the stuff that comes out of that place, bro. Like I know you've done a bit of there. Like, is it going to be back on the schedule soon, or is it something you got in the back pocket for a bit later?
No, I think I'll go back there really soon. When I'm back in Europe, I will try to chase those there because it's so easy for us. Like, we have all the EasyJet and Ryanair airline companies, they are really cheap to fly over. So yeah, I'm definitely keen to chase Ireland. The waves are...
Sorry, go on.
No, I was saying the waves there are incredible. It's actually similar to Australia, I reckon, the quality of the waves.
Yeah, super heavy, eh? And I know they're getting cop a bit of wind and their tidal changes around 5 to 7 meters, but like when you've got a good pattern over there, like it's proper raw North Atlantic swell, hey?
Yeah. It's a bit, it's hard with what you're saying, like with the tides and the winds and all the storms. But whenever like the conditions are good, it's actually like amazing. They have really good rock formation there, let's say, like they have like really deep waters into shallow reefs, and that's what we need for bodyboarding at least. Have you been there? Have you surfed?
Nah, man. How's this? My name is Luke Aloysius Patrick O'Connor. I've got all Irish background and heritage on both sides, and I still haven't been, bro. It's a bit of a black mark on my existence here on planet Earth because I haven't been back to the motherland, the homeland. And even one of my favorite boog flips is ABC, man, like a blank canvas. So, when I've watched that when I was younger with, like, you know, Brendo and Crashy and Matic and Harry Dixon all doing their trips over there, and them having a motorhome and just living the fine life and scoring huge pits and having outrageous parties and just, you know, like living on the edge. I look at Ireland and think, what a time. Like, even with like Marley Dunn over there recently with Ben Betteridge and them having a van and carrying on and cruising around, like that's a dream. Because it just seems like such a beautiful country and yeah, the waves when they're on, they're world class. So got to get over there. The only thing I wouldn't be able to cop, I don't think, and I don't know if you can, but I'm not the best at them. It's just drinking proper Guinness. Like, I don't know if I can do it, bro.
you have to get used, and because of the cold, it's nice to drink like a different kind of like beer, a bit more heavy. It has a different texture as well. So I think you have to get used to it and then it's good. I remember in the beginning, I didn't like it too much, but then it was just like the best drink to have after a surf.
Yeah, it's everyone says that too, eh? Like that's exactly what I've heard time and time again. But yeah, I just get black tar cruising down my throat. I guess I've drink a lot of bourbon and coke and Jack Daniels, so I shouldn't be too afraid of black tar going down my esophagus. But yeah, Guinness is a wild one. They reckon it's like a meal, hey, like it's almost a meal in a beer.
Yeah, it's really heavy. But I feel like if you are in Ireland, you go to a pub, you can ask one beer that it's not a Guinness, but after a while, it's just like, it doesn't feel normal to drink something else. Like I think like the first ones you drink, you feel like it's not that good, but then you just, I don't know, you just appreciate it and it's really good. Like you feel like satisfied after drinking one. Yeah, it's definitely good, bro. You have to try it.
I heard they get you pretty pissed too, hey?
Yeah, they do. They are really loose. Like, similar to Australians.
Sorry, bro?
No, I was saying like Irish guys are similar to Australians in the sense that they are really loose and drink a lot and they spend like a lot of time in pubs and everything.
Dude, you know why? Because, you know, when you really think about the makeup of our culture and where our, you know, the white generations of Australians have come from since coming over here, and I don't want to go into the dark history between us and our indigenous brothers, so to speak. But like, man, you got to look at it and think to yourself, we're made up of Englishmen, Irishmen, Scotsmen. Like, you know, you've got a couple other mixes in Europe there, but we're just a huge fuck off convict concentration camp, really, man. Like, when you think about it, like, all of our descendants were sent out here for either petty crimes or serious crimes. And we're just, yeah, fourth, fifth, sixth generation coming through. You know what I mean? As a really young white settlement. I'll call it that, moving forward with a lack of culture. We've definitely got culture. We've really banded together and you know, got Aussie spirit and oi, 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 and, yeah, the pub culture and looking out for a mate, and we've linked up with the Kiwis for the Anzac legends, and there's so many things there that are epic. But, you know, look at your history, man. You guys have got 1,000 years plus. We are 250 years. We're one quarter of your time. And that's me just saying off the top of my head, 1,000 years. It could be more of a dynasty, you know, over your way and so many other countries in Europe and cultures. So we're just one big fuck off convict colony, man, and that's why we love spending time in pubs, and that's why we you know, enjoy carrying on and watching competitive sport and you know, having a good time, because we're finally free. Well, essentially free, you know, that people would argue that that point, black and blue, but we're free from our shackles and chains, because essentially our, you know, convict descendants built the infrastructure in this country, and we're just lucky to be born in this time to take it on up and utilize it.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. That's why Australia is like a good place to live, I reckon. It's you guys are funny, and you have like a great country, and it's still like developing. It's like compared to Europe, it's crazy how, like, I there's one thing you guys say a lot that I cannot comprehend really well, which is when I speak to someone from the bodyboarding scene, like, I'm living in Sydney or whatever, everyone says like, oh, Sydney, it's so chaotic, like, I cannot imagine living there, blah blah blah. And if I compare Sydney to a city in Europe, it's a joke, because like Lisbon, it's way more chaotic. Madrid, Paris, or whatever, it's like, those are like really big cities with a lot of people living, no space for anything, and you'd see like cars everywhere, people everywhere, tourists everywhere. Compared to Sydney, like, I remember when I arrived here, there's no one on the streets compared to Europe.
Yeah, it is true. It's true, man, because like we you know, we take for granted how, you know, like poorly populated we really are when you think about it. Like, for example, I think we've got 26 or 27 million people in the country on a whole. And if you look at the state of California in America, I'm pretty sure they've got 35 to 38 million people. So, like, they've got way more people in one state of America, which is a super heavily populated state. Like, it's one of the golden states of America. And I think America's population is around 340 million, sorry. And especially with a lot of illegal immigrants or immigrants, or yeah, people just streaming up the border over the last year or so, who knows how many uncounted people are in that country anyway. So, but back to your point, our whole country is at 26 million. California has, yeah, between 35 to 40 or whatever it is. Like, it's insane to think that, you know, how much space we do have and how we harp on about things getting busier and whatever, but it's like, it's yeah, it's your own environment and you only know what you know. So I guess, yeah. It's funny when you've got an outsider coming in from a different country and you're kind of just going, man, like, you guys are cruising. You've got so much space. I guess biggest thing about Australia is, though, a lot of it is uninhabitable. Like, I think, fuck, don't quote me on this, I think 70 to 80% of our country is uninhabitable, just because of the, like, you probably could do it if you really were willing to, but it's very arid desert like in landscape that just doesn't allow for, you know, day-to-day life to blossom like it would on the East Coast or the West Coast or the South Coast or like whatever up on North. Like, it's, you know, a lot of our population, if not, you know, 90 to 95% of our population is focused on the coast or in like major cities on the coast. Like, look at all the major cities. Like, you look, Brisbane is like an hour and a half from the coast. Sydney's right on the coast. Melbourne is pretty much on the coast. Perth is on the coast. Adelaide is on the coast. Like, you know, you've got, well, I mean, Adelaide's just a little bit further in, but it's still got parts like that are coastal, you know. So yeah, it's just it's crazy when you like really compare it. Then you look at Europe and, you know, people are just populating, you know, just the landmass everywhere. Like, you drive through, I remember driving through Spain and you're just kind of cruising down through it and you're just like, shit, there's just people in the middle of this little country town. It's beautiful and it's got like a river running through it and mountains here, and, you know, people survive off, you know, there's a wood chopper in town, or there's like a delicatessen, or, you know, someone's a local sparky or whatever, but they're everyone is just, you know, spread out all over the place, where for us we're so concentrated in very small areas.
Yeah. You know how to live it well, though, because everyone is living like near the coast, which is sick. In Portugal, like, I don't know, like, there's so many people in land, like, some big cities inland as well, which for us is it's not good. Bodyboard is the shortest.
Yeah, it's a hard one, eh? Like, you're subject to where you grow up, and yeah, if you are like that far in, you know, in the middle of nowhere, like Madrid, for example, like you mentioned Madrid before in Spain. I keep referring back to Spain, but it's just such a well-known city. That's Madrid's pretty much in the middle of Spain. Am I right?
Yeah, it's literally in the middle.
You know what I mean? So like, you're 6 or 8 hours from the coast in any direction, like minimum. So it's kind of like, fuck, man. Like, you grow up there and you want to boogie, you want to surf, or you want to do anything in the ocean. Like, it's just, it's not really feasible unless you're going to relocate somewhere. So, yeah, it should be so blessed here in Australia to even think of the where the population's concentrated, that we're all on the coast and we've got that accessibility. Like, when you think about it, man, how many people in Australia on the East Coast alone enter the water every day?
Yeah, that's crazy. And everyone, even the older people that swim every day. And in Portugal, we don't have anything of that. Like, we just have surfers and bodyboarders getting in the water. And obviously in the summer, there's people in the beach, but that's it. Like, here you have way more sports and way more people connected to the ocean, which is great, I think.
Bro, the best thing, you know, speaking about like older people swimming or whatever, the best thing I noticed in Portugal was every morning you'd walk past the cafes, like you'd be walking down the street to go to a bakery, or you'd be, you know, getting up in the morning to go surfing or whatever it was, and you'd always have the old papas and mamas out there sipping on their little espressos and and just yarning about the day or what's coming up and talking about what's in the news. And I just used to just find it so fascinating that that was such a ritual in Portugal, where everyone would have their morning coffee. You know, like, if you've been in Australia for a long time now, like, people in coffee shops, they're getting their coffees and they're boosting. Like, yeah, there's a couple of people sitting down to have a chat and they've gone on this coffee date or whatever and blah, blah, blah. But like, most of the time, people just getting their coffee and they're off to work, they're off to do this or that. In Portugal, it just seems like everything for the first couple of hours is so slow and, you know, almost like it's like a romantic scene watching people drink their coffees. Like, they're not making out or like flirting with each other, but they're so intertwined with their conversations and they're enjoying their company, each other's company. Like, it's really cool. I reckon that's a really nice part of your culture. Like, your culture's amazing. I'm enthralled with it anyway, but like, when I looked at that, I was like, that is really cool. And that's, you know, enjoying the time together, which us Australians, we just don't seem to do.
Yeah, it's different. Like, in every little town or whatever, you will always find that group of old people just sitting down, doing nothing, just talking and drinking a coffee or drinking a beer or whatever. And it's really nice because you can even sit with them and just talk to them, where in Australia, that doesn't happen. I reckon it obviously can happen, but it's not that common. In Portugal, you can just sit with an old man and talk about stories, and he's happy to talk with you all day. And if you study, he can talk with you like for a week, telling you stories from the past or whatever.
Oh man, but again, that's just such a there's just so much history there and just so much stuff to chat about. Like, that's a really cool connection you guys have. I love it. And the espressos in the morning, is it Café Pingato?
Café Pingado.
Yeah, Pingato, like, that's it.
It's like an espresso with a dash of milk. It's the best. That's what I ask when I'm in Portugal.
Yeah, me too. I drink black coffee anyway. I just have it, two double espressos in the morning. I'm good to go. Like, I'm fired up like a bull out of the fucking gates after copping an electric prod to the behind, bro. Like, I am going. So when you have an espresso like that in Portugal in the morning too, you guys do some good strong coffee. So I'm well into it.
Yeah.
You know what's another beautiful word in your culture, Steph, that like Antonio says a lot, and I'm sure you guys all do, but that me and Lauren never forgot since we visited your country?
What is it?
Teja.
Teja.
Just Teja, the way it rolls, like goodbye, like, you know, see you later, whatever, Teja. Like, it's such a beautiful word, especially when you guys say it, like, Teja, Teja. We just still say it at home sometimes. It's that fucking funny, but it's, yeah, well, something that's always stuck in Portugal.
Yeah, that one, like, everyone says it, yeah. It's lovely.
You must be going, what the fuck is he talking about, this weird cunt? But it's one of those words that just like stuck in our head, and yeah, it's so cool. You guys have such a cool culture over there, man. Like, we fell in love with the Portuguese culture. It's a beautiful place.
Yeah indeed. It's really nice, and I actually miss it. I'm glad I'm going back soon and see all the friends and live like the culture again, because yeah, it's different, it's way different in this side of the world.
yeah you always gotta go back to the roots and back to the things that you love. Well, bros, you know, we've had a really good chat, we've covered some cool ground, we're gonna miss you here in Australia. I've just been so accustomed to waking up and looking at my Instagram feed and just seeing you absolutely tearing the bag up and down the East Coast, if not all around Australia, like I said in the intro. It was sick to have you in the Shark Island Challenge. I know the waves weren't exactly what we wanted, but it was great to have you in there competing, and you know, you surfed some really smart heat. So it was really cool to see that. And yeah, don't be a stranger and come back soon, man, because, like, you know, you're really fun and crazy guy to hang out with, and it'd just be good to have some professional boogs coming back to Australia and like making the pilgrimage like old days, because it raises the standard and people get hungry, and you know, it's like, as I said to Moody Young on the phone today, we're talking about a couple of things, and I mentioned the old saying of a high tide in the harbour raises all ships, and when good people come over to Australia, there's a high tide and everyone gets raised up. So yeah, thanks so much for coming on the potty, bro, and really appreciate your time.
Thanks, Luke, and thanks for the invitation for the Shark Island as well. And hopefully I'll be back next year, and additionally, hopefully we can have another sesh soon before I leave. There's a good forecast coming, so let's try to link up.
Dude, definitely. Saturday, Sunday, hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, and thanks for inviting me for the party as well. It was a great talk. And yeah, see you soon, I guess.
See you in the cone, bro. Cheers, Steph. I'll speak to you soon, bro. It was all a pipe dream, watching bodyboarding up.